Welcome to this week's episode of Trista's Plate Story Podcast. I'm Trista Polo from iwokeupawesome.com, and I am your host. Each week, we learn the story behind that vanity plate. You know, the one you saw driving down the road? What did it say? What did it mean? Why did they choose it?
Welcome. I'm so excited to have today's plate story guest. It's Dan Hines from Panama City Beach, Florida. His license plate is I'm Sexy. Welcome, Dan.
Thank you, Trista. Thanks for having me.
I'm excited to have you. You know, I can't say your license plate without putting my own little, you know, joie de vivre on it. It's just so fun.
Oh, yeah. And that's the whole point. I mean, it's I originally wanted to just say Sexy, but then my girlfriend at the time, but now wife, said, put an IM in front of that. Put an I'm Sexy in front of that. I'm like, that sounds great. And so she always kind of rubs that in my face. Like, that was me. That I helped you with that plate.
That's right. That's got her signature on there as well. Now, I'm Sexy. Tell us the story behind your plate.
Yes, I guess it's twofold, is that I played saxophone in high school. Well, I started playing the alto saxophone in the fifth grade. That was my instrument that I picked up and never really put it down. Played it all through high school and then in college as well, in collegiate marching band and other concert bands as well. So that's where the Sexy comes from. But it's also, you know, I was in marching band, and if anyone out there has been in marching band or you've hung around band nerds, yeah, exactly, enough, you realize like, we like making jokes. We love having fun, and just those puns and everything else fit really well. And I'm originally from the state of Iowa, went to Iowa State University, and there's a lot of vanity plates for that university as well as the University of Iowa and other universities in Iowa. So I'm like, when I got to college, I'm like, I want a new plate. And when you pick a new plate, you might as well make it vanity. And I was in marching band, so that's where everything just kind of came together all at once.
I love it. Now, your girlfriend, now wife, she was in marching band too, yes?
Yes, she played the piccolo and the flute, and that's where we met, was marching band. So we're marching band marriages.
I love it. You know, I also played the flute in marching band.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, you know, that's the fun thing about flutes and other woodwinds, is that we kind of have this thing against all of the trumpets and all of the brass instruments. So because they're so much louder, so we all kind of
really
stick
are.
Together. We all stick together as one woodwinds.
Yes, I just have this memory. It is so clear in my head of having to turn my body and feet while keeping my head forward so that I could make the right formation for the football game.
Yes, exactly.
It's like, and just it's coming back to me right now.
Well, and especially with a piccolo or a flute, is you got your elbow out there as well. So it's just, yeah, you got to get flexible. You got to stretch before marching band, despite what many other people probably think.
That's right. It wasn't field hockey, but it had its own merits for physical fitness. Absolutely.
This is true.
So I never did marching band in college, definitely high school for all 4 years. Any good stories about marching band in college? Is it any different than high school?
Yes, it is. Mainly because we're all adults now and we're all on our own. And you know, you remember those American Pie movies where like, there's this one time at band camp. It was never that bad, but it's, you join a family. The moment you join marching band, and it was one of the best decisions of my life. I remember freshman year, you start band camp before the actual like semester begins. So you get to move in early. So that's pretty cool. But it was, the band director said, you know, those of you that just joined or are here for the first time, you don't know this, but you just joined a family of 350 people. These are the people you're going to go to class with, that you're going to laugh with, that you're going to cry with, that you're going to take tests with, that you're going to marry and eventually have band babies. And it's like, everyone kind of chuckles at that. But it's just, you know, you get through that first year and you're like, yeah, he's right. And so that's when it's voluntary and everybody wants to be there and you get to go to college football games. That's why I try to get anyone who's thinking about college marching band. I'm like, just do it once. Do it your freshman year, where the classes don't matter nearly as much as like once you get to be senior. You have time to retake things if you really mess things up, but you a huge difference. And I'm so grateful and thankful that I did it. I found over my years of college that my grades were always better in the fall semester than they were in the spring because of marching band, because it just kept me more focused. It kept me more disciplined because it's like, I got to keep my grades up and I got to get things done so that, because it's not going to happen on Saturday. As soon as that game is over and I get changed out of that uniform and take a shower, there's nothing getting done the rest of the day. Like we're done.
Do you still play? Do you pull out the sax and, you know, do any duets with your wife?
I actually don't. You know, after I stopped having a reason to play, I've let the instrument go. So yeah, in my embouchure, the muscles in my mouth, if I started playing, I would be, those muscles would be dead in an hour. Like but you know, all the fingerings and how to read music would come back. But no, haven't had a reason to get back into it in the last probably decade now.
Wow. Do you ever miss it?
A little bit. I guess, you know, if I missed the actual playing of the music, certainly I'd get it out and play. Honestly, what I miss the most is the camaraderie, the being part of a group, being part of a team, being part of a band, and the adventures that you have and the music that you play. Because there's just nothing better. You know, if you love listening to music, it's 10 times better being in the actual band creating the music and hitting those notes and hitting those chords and creating those emotions. It's even more fun. So I miss the being part of the team. That's what I really miss the most.
Yeah, I can understand that. That makes a lot of sense. So since you're not a professional sax player or marching band member, what is it that you do for a living?
Sure. So I am the vice president of our family's business, but I also have a business as a financial coach. So I have a YouTube channel where I help couples unite, not fight over money, whether they want to crush debt faster, buy a house sooner, or get on the same page. And that's been growing pretty steadily for about a year now. And I'm excited to keep it going.
That's awesome. How did you learn to do that? Because I find most people in that game, it was because they had a hard time. They figured out how to get out of debt. Now they want to pay it forward. Is that your story too?
A little bit. The debt part, not so much. I actually, straight out of college, I became a financial advisor for a large national firm. And I got about 2 years into it, and it wasn't quite for me. It was fun helping families and individuals make decisions on like retirement accounts and insurance and stuff like that. But I really kind of wanted to do my own thing. And if I wanted to do my own thing, I couldn't be under a major firm because, you know, the words I was saying weren't my own. They had to be approved by the marketing department. And so there's nothing against that firm itself. It was just like, well, I want to do my own thing, have books and stuff like that. And so the second part to that is it can be expensive and very time consuming to keep those licenses, to beat all the regulations that come with it. So I moved to like, well, I can still help people with financial decisions. What can I do that doesn't require such expensive licenses? And it turns out, you know, helping people with budgeting and debt and things of that nature is good to go. I can do that all day, every day. And it's a lot of, it's very rewarding as well. Because I think at some point, when you are helping, you know, the rich get richer, it's like, okay, well, some families, you know, once they get to a certain point, they earned it, definitely. But when you get to see someone pay off their first credit card, or they just learn how to budget and how it's going to improve their lives, it filled a much deeper spot in my soul to say, like, this is fun. This is what I want to do. This is how I want to give back.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you're making a difference for families, and mm-hmm. that's huge. I'm sure that really helps you sleep very well at night. Can you give us some examples of some tips that you would give for a couple just starting out? Because I find when you're just starting out, you don't really know how the other person is about money. You haven't made any big financial decisions yet. And I don't think we tend to talk about it much until it's kind of like, let's combine or not combine our checking accounts. So what thoughts do you have on couples just starting out?
Yeah, I mean, in the end, there are three major habits that you want to master in order to master money together. The first habit is setting goals. And so that's, you know, all the clients that I take on and all the couples I talk with, that's what we do first, is to say, I want to know what it is that you want. Is it, do you want to get out of debt? Do you want an emergency fund? Do you know what an emergency fund is? Have you thought about retirement? Do you want to get into investing? And really just start to get an idea, because when it comes to money, fortunately, there's a price on everything. There are numbers that you can calculate and that you can get to. And there's no right way to handle money. There's no right way to reach your goals, but getting down into the weeds to say, okay, if we want an emergency fund, how much do we want in that fund? And when do we want that done? And then you can get like a monthly number. And when we have those monthly numbers, then we could get onto the other habits to say, oh, okay, so habit number two is tracking. Like, do you have a spreadsheet? Is there an app where you can just see everything coming and going? That's it. Just coming and going. You don't have to be an amateur accountant. Just watch it come and go and have it somewhat organized. Because then the third habit is then making decisions. Is you know what you want, you know what's going on. And the third part is, what do we want to do next? How do we want to plan our next month and spend our money or save our money to reach those goals? But yeah, the first one is, what is it that you want? Let's just start talking about it. There's no right answer, but to know what that is helps to define what you want to do first or what you should do first.
That's great. I know you do the YouTube channel. Do you also coach and work with people individually or as couples?
Yeah, I focus mostly on couples. I mean, I can coach individuals as well, but it's, you know, when it comes to couples, it's that communication part. I focus a lot on communication. That's the number one key. And then the second part gets to, okay, well, here's the app you should use. Here's the buttons you should click and that type of stuff, which is important. But I really want couples to walk away from my coaching, being able to talk about money. Because if they work with me for a day, or a month or 3 months, eventually they're going to reach their goals or their goals are going to change. And I want them to have the tools, especially the communication tools, to make decisions and to talk and to decide. Because, you know, tools will change, goals will change, the world will change. And they may not be my clients or they may not, you know, be watching my YouTube channel when that happens.
Yeah, that's really important. I'm a coach and trainer as well, more for entrepreneurship and leadership and team than money. But communication right down the center is also a huge piece of what I coach people on as well. I'd love to hear like the most common challenges that you hear when people approach you and ask you to coach them.
Mm-hmm. You know, especially with couples, it comes down to they don't seem to be on the same page. Like I was talking to a couple just last week and it was kind of a sales session. They haven't signed up for coaching yet, but you know, the wife wanted more certainty, or that's what I could hear. She was asking me about an emergency fund. She was talking about getting out of debt, but then the husband was just like, I want to get into investing. Should I buy Amazon stock? And which is fine. All of those goals are fine. There's nothing wrong with any of them. But I think couples, the first thing to do is that when you start to listen to each other, as far as your goals is start to think about what's underneath that. Well, why does a wife want an emergency fund and doesn't care about Amazon stock? And some of us are more risk averse and more risk taking than others. And so it's the goals are common. It's investing, retirement, emergency fund, getting out of debt, you know, buying a house. What should we do about our car? Like those are the top goals. But when it comes to a couple specifically where they're not really communicating well, it's to dig into like, okay, why is that her primary goal? And why is that his primary goal? And then we can start to talk about and understand what the underlying needs are to then say, okay, here's your plan going forward with money. You know, it's, you know, maybe we should do the emergency fund first because you could get that done faster. And it feels great to sleep better at night knowing that cash is in the bank, and then we'll get to the investing. Or it could be other, you do both at the same time, but it's to understand each other's point of views and then move forward.
Yeah, that's super important. Now, you used to live in Iowa and now you're in Florida. Mm-hmm. What brought you to that move? That's a pretty big move.
It is. Well, that's because my amazing, awesome, most wonderful wife that hopefully is going to listen to this someday is a dolphin and sea lion trainer.
All right. Well, now we got to talk about that a little bit. I've never met one of those.
They're wonderful, although they come home smelling a little funny at the end of the day. But beyond that, yeah, it was a dream of hers for as long as she can really remember. I think her parents hoped that she would grow out of it, but she never did. She got a biology degree at Iowa State. And, you know, just like any industry, you get an internship or you just kind of apply until you get in. And fortunately, she got an internship straight out of college as soon as she graduated here in Panama City Beach. And it turned into a job right after that, as soon as the summer internship was over. And so, you know, once she got that job, I basically flew down and proposed, and we've been here ever since.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. So I assume it's at like an amusement park or a Sea World kind of place. Where does she actually train and entertain with dolphins and sea lions?
Yes. Yep. Dolphins and sea lions. They do also have seals, so you wouldn't be wrong either way. but yeah, it's like a small Sea World. It's called Gulf World, like the Gulf of Mexico. And the park has been here since like the 1960s. It's been around for a long, long time.
Wow.
It was family owned for decades. And so, yeah, so she's been there. And a lot of people have asked, like, well, why haven't you moved on to Atlanta Sea Aquarium or SeaWorld or somewhere else? And, you know, the truth is, she's just like, I'm doing exactly what I want with people I enjoy being around. So it's just like, why move somewhere and go right back to the bottom of the totem pole?
That's great. You know, you have to enjoy what you're doing. And I think it's about more than being upwardly mobile.
Yes. And that was something that I asked myself when I was a financial advisor. You know, I only got 2 years into it, but I looked at advisors that had been there 20 years and I'm like, there's no one that I want to become. Like there was no like mentor role model. Like I want to be them in 20 years. And, you know, she's kind of felt the same way. She's just like, she's exactly at the level that she wants to be, where she's a leader, but she still works with the animals every day. And if she moved up higher up the chain, she'd get farther away from the animals. And she's just like, I don't want to do that. That's not me.
I got into this to hang out with the animals. Yeah,
yeah,
that's
absolutely
awesome. Cause you're right. I'm thinking about it. And I do know that the higher up in management you get, the farther from the hands-on work you get in probably any profession.
Oh yeah, and absolutely. But, you know, going back to communication with couples, I tell everybody that, you know, it's okay if the work, the clicking of the buttons and the math is 90-10. All of our decisions are 50-50. Is if there's a major decision to make, we sit down and make it, and then I go click the buttons. And so that's where, and it's another thing where certainly I don't want something to happen to me and her to be clueless. Because that has happened to a lot of couples in the world where it's just like one side takes care of everything, which is great for the other side of the couple. But then something happens, they're in a coma, or unfortunately, maybe there's a death. And it's just like, now what? And they're just clueless, or their names weren't on the bank accounts, and so they don't have access. And so, you know, when I'm talking with couples, and especially with my wife, is I'm making sure our names are on everything so that if she needs access, she's got access, and that she understands what's going on, even if she doesn't have to like physically do all of the button clicking.
Yeah, I think you're so right about that. And it goes beyond even a death. If they split up and one of you has no idea what's going on financially, I think that can be as big a problem. I mean, yeah, you can call them, but I don't think they're going to come over and help you budget the checkbook.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So yeah, balancing a checkbook, just keeping an eye on the bank accounts, knowing where they are and where all the username and passwords are. That's key as well.
It certainly is. Now, I wanted to go back to your license plate because I had wanted to ask you this before. I'm Sexy seems like the sort of license plate that would get a little attention. So I have to ask, do people ever comment on your plate?
They do from time to time. It's not strangers. It's usually people that know me and, you know, I've parked at their house or we're meeting in a parking lot and they see me next to my car and they're like, oh, that's your car. I've never had strangers like get out of their car and be like, cool, license plate. haven't had any of that. But one thing that is really fun to do whenever I'm at a stop sign or a stoplight and someone pulls up behind me, I'm always checking my rear view mirror to see if they're smiling. And I have caught some people like taking a picture of it. And so that's just a little piece of joy every once in a while. Like, okay, I made someone's day a little better. So I don't talk to them, but I still get a reaction. And that feels great.
That's awesome. I'm the one taking your picture driving behind you. That's totally me.
Oh, there you go. Check this out. Look what I found today.
Yeah, exactly. Or what the heck were they trying to say with this plate? Anybody have any ideas?
Yeah. I was trying to make mine ridiculously obvious.
You succeeded.
Thank you.
Now,
thank you.
I have to check in about the background. If people are watching the video version of this podcast, you've got a lot of stuff going on behind you. So I can't let it go by. Can you give us a little tour of your background?
Oh, gosh. Okay. So this is a picture of my family. So my parents and my sisters, which might be hard to see. This is a red stapler. So if you're a fan of Office Space, that's exactly where that came from. Then I've got, you know, Simpsons DVDs. I've got all the whole family here. I can move my camera. So I've got the three kids, but then in these upper shelves, I've got Marge and Homer. So I, you know, the camera doesn't see all of those right away. But then Kansas City Chiefs, we've been fans since I was a kid, especially being from Iowa. And these here are the red hat is a Tony Robbins hat. Huge fan of Tony Robbins. I actually just did his Unleash the Power Within virtual conference. Phenomenal.
Online, right?
Yeah, phenomenal. Oh my goodness. And I've been to one other event of his live. And, you know, for being virtual, it's about as close as you could get. So I had a great time. And then this is the same brand, the Lucky Clover brand, but an Iowa State hat. And then, yeah, I've got a lightsaber that is a custom built from Disney World. And we're actually going back next week. I'm not going to buy another one because they're $200 a pop. So one is enough for now. And then I've just got a whole bookshelf full of books. And then this picture down here is actually here. Let me grab it just real fast. Besides the lightsaber, it is my favorite Disney World because it's from the Haunted Mansion. So you move my face, it goes back and forth. So I love that thing. And then finally, here's an autographed ticket of Lewis Black, one of my favorite stand-up comedians. So that's the quick tour.
Awesome. Oh, that's great.
And this right here, UPW, instead of walking on fire, you punch through the board. Yep. And so that's my board that I broke just this weekend.
Oh, very cool. Event.
Yeah. So everything's got
very,
a little
story. Very cool. I love that. I have to tell you that I saw Lewis Black in New York City at this dive bar. We have a friend who's a professional comedian, but back when he was first getting started, he needed a certain number of people to say they were there to see him just for him to get like 6 minutes on the mic. And I was working in New York City at the time. So, and my husband loves stand up and he loves an adventure. So he would drive about 2 hours down to the city. I'd get off work. We'd go get a quick dinner and then go to wherever my friend Joe was performing. We would stay for the show and then my husband would drive me home. But one night, Jim Gaffigan and Lewis Black both performed and they were coming up. They weren't TV movie famous yet.
Yeah.
But they were definitely very well-known comics. And I have a picture and I have Lewis Black, Jim Gaffigan, and then my friend Joe's autograph all on the same thing.
Oh, cool.
And it's cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah,
wow.
It's cool. It's a that good sounds... memory. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a, you know, I've never been to New York City. That's like my next, once we can travel again, that's going to be very high on my list.
Yeah.
To go travel and just be a tourist for a day or not a day, I mean, like a whole week.
I was going to say, yeah, make sure you have time and money to enjoy it when you're there. Wait until Broadway is open because you want to take in a show. Maybe go to TKTS and get discounted tickets for a show and then just see some amazing live theater and really, yeah, take the time and the money to enjoy it and do it right. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. It's something I'm looking forward to. Well, and especially, you know, going to, you know, certainly I don't know any prices, but like the Comedy Cellar or just other of those places, like just if even if it's like a Wednesday night, like I just want to go.
Absolutely. Well, my husband reminded me that the reason that Jim and Lewis were there is because they were trying out a set for a big show. Might even have been an HBO special. I can't remember, but they were trying out their stuff to see how it landed on a live audience. And so that's super cool. But I agree, it's the weeknights where you'll see some of the worst comedians of your life. Like, you feel bad for these people. You really like, your heart goes out to them. You're excruciatingly miserable the whole time because there's just no saving them. There's just no saving them, but your heart goes out because you know, this is their dream or they wouldn't be there, you know?
Yeah. It'll make me feel better. Like, oh, you know, recording YouTube videos in my little home office doesn't feel so bad. It's not nearly as scary.
I remember there was this one, he had a keyboard and a guitar and he brought all this stuff up with him for his 6-minute set. And it was just, I mean, it wasn't good comedy. It wasn't good music. It just wasn't good.
He was failing on every side of the aisle.
But I'll never forget it. You know, it was like such a memorable experience. So take in some good comedy, take in some bad comedy for the up and comers. You'll see some amazing comedians like before they, and then you'll see them later somewhere and say, oh my gosh, I saw that guy when he was just coming out. Yeah, really, really good. Really
that,
good
that's stuff. The story that I want.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, that's awesome. So do you have any kind of sage advice? You know, it's been a really hard pandemic. We're not out of the woods yet. People have been struggling, laid off, furloughed, hoping for that unemployment bonus, the stimulus check. Any advice to help people just kind of keep their sanity about their finances during this time?
Yeah, I think the best thing is to keep your priorities in order. You know, it's and to keep an eye on things. I know it hurts to see a bank account that is really low or to open up a credit card statement and see everything that you've bought. But it's kind of like if you stop weighing yourself and keeping track of your weight, it's just kind of going to go by the wayside. So there needs to be something that you can keep an eye on, some metric, some number that you can keep an eye on. That way, also, when relief comes, you know exactly what to do and when to do it. Is that you're, because I think a lot of people, there's a phrase out there somewhere in the world that is essentially that success is when preparation meets opportunity. And so if you can go to the library and grab some personal finance books, is to say like, hey, it's free. I got not much else going on. Let's learn. Let's prepare. So that way, when I get that stimulus check or the next paycheck or the next job, or I need some sort of opportunity to grab onto, I can recognize it. I know what it is and where it is and what to do with it when it lands in my lap. Because I think that also can be said eventually when you want to get into, I don't know, real estate investing or stock trading or something, is to say, to make a great, to study other people that have already done it before. Just copy them. You know, I'm going to write a book. A lot of other people have written books and a lot of the advice is phenomenal. So now could be a great learning opportunity to prepare for when springtime comes, because it's winter right now. But when spring comes, you'll know what to do and you'll know what to plant. So that way the rest of the year, it'll grow.
So smart. Very sage, very, very sage advice. Because I think when you're in a low point, it's easy to surrender to it, do stuff around the house, avoid thinking about the hard stuff. But what you're saying is be informed, educate yourself, stay on top of it mentally. So when you get that next opportunity to get back on top of it financially, you'll know what to do and you'll be smart about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So to not only be smart about it, but it's also like the world has changed. It's probably not going back to anything that we wanted, but that you could say that about any year. You know, we had Y2K or the scare of it back in 99, and then we had 9/11, and then, you know, 2008 financial crash, and then something happened in between there somewhere. So if you can, while you got the time, get ahead of the curve and learn something new. And so that way, when things are better again and the sun is shining, you can make as much hay as possible.
Perfect. I love it. So I always like to turn the tables before we wrap up and ask if you have one question that you'd like to ask me. So this is the time. What do you got?
Yeah. Well, since we were on comedy, what's the license plate that made you laugh the hardest? Like, was the best joke that you can remember?
It's a very good question. So many good ones. You know, because of my vanity plate Instagram account, mm-hmm. did you know that there's this subculture of vanity plate accounts on Instagram? There are so many of them. And so, of course, we follow each other, right? Mm-hmm. Did you also know that in Maine, there are no requirements? You can just have whatever you want, including swear words.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yes, indeed. They're trying to change the law to take out the offensive ones.
Mm.
But as of right now, they still have it.
When all the plates that you've seen, what has been the most impactful plate as far as like it meant the most to the person that got it?
So I think I'm on episode 46 as of the recording of this. And that's a hard question to answer because there are so many plates that are chosen because of the meaning behind them. Like yours is fun and quirky and funny, and it refers to a really important time in your life. But there's one in particular, the plate is keep going. Mm. And it's to remind her to keep going no matter what, as she deals with chronic pain.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another one, GPS Hope. And this is a couple that travels around the country offering hope to parents that lost their kids. And it was started because they went through the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's another one, Go Play. And she bought her Jeep at the lowest point in her life. And she thought she was never going to have to make the first payment. And she got her whole life by joining the Jeep community.
Mm.
I mean.
Yeah. And that's a key lesson. And that's a lesson I've had to learn in the last year as well, is that I've been trying to, you know, get the YouTube channel going and I wanted to write a book and, you know, I was essentially starting to burn out. And I have, you know, I was talking about Tony Robbins earlier and I have a Tony yeah. Robbins results coach.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And one of the lessons that she taught me and that I had to learn is to say, you know, if you want to work hard, you got to play hard. And that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. It's just, when you work hard, you're focused. You're like, I'm getting stuff done. I'm being productive. I'm in the zone. But when you play the same way, is that you want to be in the zone, take time off, turn off your phone. And it could be a book. It could be a movie. It could be something quiet. And as an introvert, I like quiet things, but it's to really be like, I'm going to seriously play. I'm going to take this seriously. I'm not going to like half play while checking email. I'm not going to half play while catching up on something else. Like I'm taking time for me to unplug. And it's amazing when you do that, how much harder and more focused you can work when Monday comes around. And that's a lesson I've had to learn for myself.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like you have to be able to manage
mm-hmm.
yourself, your self-care, not work all the time. Not get distracted and let work take over, especially when you're trying to build something like a YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's hard. You got to really like what you're talking about to grind one of those things out every single solitary week.
Yeah. And also you either have to love editing or hire an editor. That's that's also part of it as well.
You are right about that. So do you have any last words before we wrap up?
I just say, if you want to find me in other places, head to YouTube and look up Adulting with Money, or you can go to adultingwithmoney.com. And if you have any questions at all, let me know. My best content, the stuff that I'm going to put in the book, come from questions that people ask. So I love to hear from you if you have any questions at all when it comes to money and budgeting and being a great couple.
That's awesome. And we will have all the ways to connect with you and access to your YouTube in the show notes, so people will be able to find you. And I just want to thank you so much for being on. It was really fun to learn your plate story and beyond.
Yes, Trista, thank you for having me. I had a great time too.
Awesome. Thanks, Dan. Have a great day.
Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of Trista's Plate Story Podcast. Please subscribe to Trista's Plate Story Podcast to get the story behind all those vanity plates driving with you on the road. And if you would like to nominate the owner of a license plate, including you, or visit any of our partners and sponsors, come and see us at platestory.com. That's PL8story.com, and give us the details. If you enjoyed this episode, please drop a review and give us a share. I'm Trista Polo, wishing you well on the road to your next adventure.